Welcome to Habitual Excellence, presented by Value Capture. This podcast and our firm is all about helping you and your organization achieve habitual excellence via one unifying focus, one value-based structure, and one performance system. In other words, it's about helping you capture dramatically more value through achieving perfect care and perfect safety for patients and staff. To learn more about Value Capture and our services, visit www.valuecapturellc.com.
Welcome to an episode of Habitual Excellence that I'm excited about. I'm Ken Siegel. I'm the CEO of Value Capture, and I'm here with Lou Shapiro, who has just retired as the president and CEO of Hospital for Special Surgery, where he and his team have really modeled what it means to be excellent. And it's a special moment where we are focusing with healthcare leaders on developing and deploying a strategy that breaks through and makes the kind of difference we need in healthcare right now amidst very challenging circumstances, and trying to use this as a moment to change deeply for the better. And Lou, your track record means we have a lot to learn from you, and we look forward to hearing about that. Hearing about that from some of your lessons learned, but also as we go forward to think about how to achieve that breakthrough as a sector and as individual institutions. So welcome at this special moment to Habitual Excellence for your second time, and we're glad to have you.
Thanks, Ken. First time was in New York and second time in Pittsburgh.
Lou has mentioned, so he was in New York running Hospital for Special Surgery the first time he appeared on the podcast with our Mark Rabin. And this time he is back in Pittsburgh, where he grew up and started his career here at Allegheny Health. Is that right?
That's right.
So it's great to have you in the Value Capture offices. We should note that in your career, you didn't just run the Hospital for Special Surgery for a decade and a half, something like that, even more. You were a senior leader at Geisinger Healthcare, doing innovative, important things in the movement that people understand. And you were at McKinsey, you were at Allegheny as you started working with some of the key founders of the quality, safety, value movement on high performance, and brought all that forward to great results. So, and you learned a lot. And you have shared a lot and achieved a lot. And I want to start by just noting for people who know, that Hospital for Special Surgery, musculoskeletal specialized hospital, and at the top of the external rankings for U.S. News and World Report, 14 years, you said, Newsweek, number one for a long time, Gallup recognition as best workplace in the world, one of the top a few times, you know, so external validation, but also run with an internal focus on excellence as the differentiator, if I'm right, Lou. So can you talk a little bit about excellence as the foundation for your leadership at Hospital for Special Surgery and going before you, and then what you tried to do with that?
Yeah, so I'm happy to try to do that.
Okay.
So HSS, as it is commonly known in shorthand, has been around for a long time, founded in 1863 as an organization that focused on one area of healthcare.
Yeah.
Obviously, from 1863 to 2023, it evolved in many ways in terms of its location or locations, its depth and breadth of services, and certainly has had ups and downs during that period of time based on its own performance, but also based on externalities, if you will. But I think One of the things that has been consistent from the beginning, and I'll build on this because it blossomed into other things, is this notion of being committed to excellence, right? I mean, that's, you know, it was founded to take care of kids who had physical disabilities, but it had the mindset of what it took to do that. And if you researched back, they may not have used the word excellence, but that was sort of like a thread, and certainly was there when I came. But I think the other factor, and HSS is just one organization, obviously in the healthcare industry, I don't know how many, there's thousands upon thousands, because it's not just hospitals, it's all kinds of organizations. And every organization, you know, has a certain starting point, right? In terms of their DNA as an organization, the communities they serve, their level of capabilities, their economic constraints, you know, what is the hand of cards they were dealt with to do something?
Right.
You know, shortly after I got to HSS, I realized that it was a purpose-driven organization. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you can find your purpose as an individual or as an organization, no matter what kind of individual you are, no matter what kind of organization you are, and you sort of embed that as the foundation of the organization, that allows you to take your organization from whatever it was, let's say that's A, to whatever you think it could be, and let's say that's B, right? So how do you take an organization from A to B? So, you know, A includes all the history of the organization. And if you can ground it in your purpose, that is that people buy into, right? It can't just be a purpose that's on the wall. People have to really, like, this is why we exist.
Right.
And I'll use HSS as the example, but I think it could apply to anything. We're sitting in a beautiful conference room with a lot of big buildings around us, and whatever businesses are there, you could transfer it.
Right.
And HSS's purpose was helping people get back to what they need and love to do, right? So that's being healthy, it's being pain-free, it's being able to work and play and do whatever you want better than any place in the world. Mm-hmm. So that was HSS's purpose.
Yeah.
If we didn't fulfill that purpose, then we had no purpose. Mm-hmm. Imagine if someone told you, you have no purpose. Like, what's the point, right?
Yeah.
So you either fulfilled that purpose or there was no point in existing. Might as well give the resources to someone else. So how do you, what's the journey that you take to achieve that? And it's obviously multifaceted, and it's a journey to a destination that you never reach. Like, you never get there. That sets the foundation, you know, without using the words, for continuous improvement.
Right.
And I think that starts with, you know, understanding what A is, understanding what your purpose is, and then understanding that, at least in today's environment, 2023, maybe, you know, by, I don't know, 2050 or 70, maybe a little different, it's still a people-centric environment. It's like people taking care of people. Now, those people who are taking care of other people have a lot of stuff to do that. Mm-hmm. Do that, you know, with, they have all kinds of technology, old technology, new technology, artificial intelligence, whatever you want to say, but still people taking care of people. And you know, after you figure out where A is and what your purpose is, then you got to make sure that you're taking care of your people. And the way I think about that is, you know, what's the culture of the organization? Mm-hmm. So the people who are taking care of other people are all in, mm-hmm. right? That they wake up every day, just like, I could stay in bed or go do this, or I can go to work. And they said, I want to go to work, right? Because I'm excited about being part of this. And that's, creating a culture is, I think, like jet fuel for an organization. It allows it to go further and faster than it would if it didn't have that. This, who said it? The famous management theorist said, culture eats strategy for lunch. Mm-hmm. Who said that?
Peter Drucker.
Peter Drucker. Yeah. I've always said, I don't agree with him. Mm-hmm. It doesn't eat strategy for lunch. Mm-hmm. It is a strategy.
Yeah.
It's like, if you have a strategic plan, you should have culture as your core foundational strategy, because it will, if you do it right, it will allow your organization to achieve a level of performance that's otherwise not attainable, right? So that's how we, so that's that. And then the final thing, and then I'll stop, is what's B?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's B? Mm-hmm. Like, where do you think you should, with your team and with the entire organization, go?
Mm-hmm.
What's the art of the possible, mm-hmm. right? And where you want to go is a function of where you've been, what your purpose is, what's going on in the external environment.
Yeah.
In terms of just economic, political, economic, social forces, but thinking about what's needed to advance, as you were talking about before, the effective state of the healthcare industry, mm-hmm. in your role, mm-hmm. in it. And that's B, your vision,
mm-hmm.
right? So now you have, where you're from, where you are, what your purpose is, your focus, you have the culture set, or at least you know what you need to do to improve it. Then you know where you want to go. And then you just dial back and, all right, how do you get there?
Okay.
And it's not, it's like, I don't know if it's breakthrough, because breakthrough's hard,
mm-hmm.
But it is, and that, that's part of B.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, getting to B requires that, but it also, mm-hmm. requires blocking and tackling,
yeah.
and getting things done the right way.
Excellent.
Just continually moving in that direction.
Right. Wow. So much there. And, great leaders tend to have very clear frameworks that make sense at a lot of different levels. And I'm sure the audience is resonating with a lot of what you're saying, and people know it's the power that comes from a clear framework and a leader that then helps everybody live it out.
Well, leader, I don't know. Obviously people have specific titles and positions in an organization, but you need to think of yourself as just, one of many.
Yeah.
And, you do have access to, the microphone, and people do look at you for setting the message. So, communicating all those things, so that you get however many people you have in your organization, whether it's 10 or 10,000 or 100,000, you get them to help lead the organization to where it needs to go. I used to have this thing that I said a lot is, leadership by all, everyone's a leader regardless of their role. And that just sort of happened spontaneously. Then I started saying it all the time. It just sort of like rolls off the tip of your tongue. But you can't just say those things, mm-hmm. unless it finds its way into the organization. Mm-hmm. People become very cynical, right? You got your talking points, but then you look and see what's happening and it's not connected. But if you can make that, if you could actualize that, leadership by all, everyone's a leader regardless of your role, man, it's very powerful.
Yeah,
very, very powerful.
I'm really struck, you've hit a number of things that, even if some leaders pay lip service to, most aren't clear on in the first place, but then executing effectively as the way is what creates the power. And, you know, what you've just been talking about, saw in Paul O'Neill and seen in some other great healthcare leaders, that focus on getting buy-in from everybody and sort of the respect for everybody that that entails. But, you know, the leader can't do it, and it's not about power. It's about the power to sort of try to earn buy-in from everybody moving the same direction and with all their heart and all their soul. So it's something. And I'm sure people would be interested a little bit. How did you find yourself? What habits did you use? How did you think about making sure it was really true and filtering in? You know, tell us a story or two about really digging in to make sure it wasn't just words. And
pardon the interruption. We'll get right back into the conversation. But first, here's an update about an upcoming event.
If you're an established executive or a new executive looking to take your organization to the next level, I have an exciting opportunity to share with you. On February 29th and March 1st, we have an executive seminar that we're holding to provide a proven framework for enterprise excellence. It's a framework to help you engage everyone in your organization and to also help build the key systems that affect organizational performance. The seminar is a small group. It's designed to be a safe, intimate space where you can learn from not only our top-notch speakers, but also learn from other colleagues in the seminar. Participants leave with not only new knowledge, but a customized plan to help you go back and apply what you just learned in your organization with this new knowledge the very next day. Details are on our website. I hope to see you there.
And I don't think going into it that I really had a framework that's just like knew it was important. So a lot of that has to do with being authentic, being visible, communicating, measuring the things that are relevant to whatever it is that you're trying to do, in this case, culture. And, I did those things, you know, sort of naturally. I didn't really have like a roadmap for it. And I've always wondered like what would have happened if we didn't emphasize that. I mean, there's no way to recreate history, but I made a, and you know, every organization has a challenge based on its size. So HSS was, you know, it was big, but not gargantuan like other organizations, 6,000 employees, 20 some locations, is, you know, allocating time to go out and just be Lou, not be CEO, just talk to people, what's going on. I have this desk and the wall is too close behind me, so I keep on banging my knee. So did you tell anyone about it? Yeah, but I said, well, let me see if I can, you know, fix that. Right. And then you help the person on the front line have a better environment, and you're teaching their supervisor or the maintenance department you model the behavior, but the intent of doing it is you just want to help that person. It's like you're not doing it because, well, I want people to know that I'm doing this so they do it. Your primary purpose is to help people, and if you do that, it comes about. So just like being visible and talking to people about important things, about their family, what they're going through, do they have what they need to do their job, what are the barriers, and then that's both authentic and visible. And communicating in some ways, this was always important. Going into COVID, we had a pretty good culture because we were doing a lot of that. So when we asked people to stop doing what they were doing and take care of COVID patients and you 1,000 people, we don't need your help. So you're just going to stay at home and we're going to pay you. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. But you other 5,000 people have to come to work. We were able to do our own version of a heroic act. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say a completely easy way, but it was fairly smooth because we had a good culture going into it. And then we tripled down on communication.
Yeah.
I would talk to people every day through videos. Mm-hmm. We'd have live stream town hall meetings, the beginning 3 times a week, then twice a week, then once a week, then every other week. So just communicating to people so they know. And you don't need a pandemic for that, but communicating to people, because if you believe leadership by all, everyone's a leader, regardless of their role, then you're going to give them the information they need so they feel like they're leading, whether it's good news or bad news. And just share the right message. So at the end of the day, all of those things is about everyone being aligned towards moving in the same direction. Mm. And then measuring is critical. You manage what you measure. You can measure things about patient flow and patient outcomes, but you can also measure, culture as well.
Yeah, the inputs and the outputs, and you gotta have facts that you're creating together with this way. So much of what you've said resonates for me, and you've just given a great example of if you've created a great culture and trust and authenticity and everybody's in, what that allows you to do in challenging circumstances as you did in COVID. And I'm struck hearing you also, you kept your framework simple and it was rooted in authentic connection and caring for the people, which you then just did. And I am remembering the chance to visit you with a colleague, and you were only, I think, a couple of years into your leadership at HSS. And, you said, let's go. And we went down into the central sterile department and we got gowned, et cetera. And, we walked through and we got to see you do that. And you were talking to people in a very authentic way, including about their lives and everything, but you're also focused on their work and, without using any lingo or anything, like how was the work flowing? What problems were they have? What did they need? And you knew their names, that there's just a simple power in honoring the work and the flows. And then we can hear how you as a leader, made sure the right measures were there that were people supporting in the modeling. So sometimes it feels like people try to make this more complicated than it should be.
Yeah, it's either.
Yeah.
I'm not that smart, or people make it more complicated because it's just not, I'm not the one who's going to help those people figure out how they do their job better.
Right.
I hired people who were much smarter about those things than me, but you create the ecosystem that allows that to thrive.
Yeah.
And I think you just go, I think whether it was the patient experience, mm-hmm. or our financial performance, mm-hmm. our external validation of our leadership position or our quality outcomes, our ability to grow and be financially healthy for employers to want to come to us, mm-hmm. for payers to want to pay us, mm-hmm. For us to recruit and retain talent. Mm-hmm. I don't want to overdo it, but It's like, I'm looking out at this beautiful courtyard. It's like having the soil be fertile so you can plant stuff and it could grow.
Yeah, powerful. I want to, you know, thinking about getting through in tough times, you know, with excellence as a foundation and people, as you said, and the model that you've described. You started with something, and I want to sort of put an underline on it and ask you to talk a little bit more about it. And it's, you know, you found purpose, and then you declared it, and we could all relate to it. And there was an element of it at the end, better than anyone else in the world. And her co-founder and inspiration, I'm sure I didn't say it exactly right.
You said it right.
Used to say, okay. Every organization in the world should try to be the best at what it does. Otherwise, why are you coming together, you know, to pull the resources together, et cetera. And so, and what I want you to ask you to talk a little bit more about that is, how did that tension or in that aspiration of an anchor of trying to be the best at what you do help?
So sometimes I don't have a great filter if I'm thinking, and that sort of goes back with being authentic, right? So if I'm thinking something, sometimes I'll say it, right? And that can be good or bad depending upon what you're thinking and how you say it. And there's obviously examples of leaders without filters where it's not a good thing. But you know, understanding the organization from where it came and where it was, let me back up for a second. I don't know if I was somewhere else, I wouldn't say the same thing. It's really derivative of where the organization came from, what's its DNA, what position it's in. So that purpose is very, very much applicable to HSS, right? So it's not, I'm not saying that that should be everyone. Yeah. Everyone should have that last phase. But what's the point of being an academic medical center in Manhattan, in New York City, that has the privilege of focusing on one disease category if you're not the best in the world at what you do? Everyone does. There wasn't a place in Manhattan that didn't do exactly what HSS did, or in any of the other four boroughs, or anywhere within a 90-mile radius of HSS where 20 million people live, or anywhere else in the country. Like, why use all those resources? I just deployed my filter right now. so it's like, that's why we exist, right? So, and you have to, it's not like you're beating your chest, like we're the best in the world. It sets a destination that you never get to, that is intended to be inspiring.
Inspiring
to people who are part of it.
Right.
Like, yeah, what, yeah. And so your people were proud of that. You have to guard against putting too much performance pressure on people that could cause the wrong things to happen. You know, in thinking about it, I think that, like, you know, surfaces, you know, caution every once in a while, but not in any pervasive way.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that sort of wanting to get up and get to work in the morning, you know, it's linked, I think, which is great. Lou, I could talk to you about these lessons all day. And for those that have not listened to your first Habitual Excellence podcast, I'd encourage them to go back and you go into some more depth there on some of these ideas and really important thinking, including about value and healthcare, and a lot to learn. So, but I want to give you a few minutes here before we let you go to talk about looking forward at this moment in healthcare. And you and I have have talked privately about a lot of things are under a lot of stress, and there's an opportunity to do a lot better going forward. And I wanted to give you a few minutes to think about this moment in healthcare and how we could deploy some of these ideas at different levels to end up in a better place. And I'll just turn it over to you to look forward for us and help guide us.
Such a complicated question. So I've been working for 40 years. 40. And there's no question that the industry has advanced and has made dramatic progress in an unlimited number of areas. Like, so we could spend hours and hours talking about all the good things. But I don't think that's productive, right? It's important to recognize that. And by the way, that applies to an organization. Don't talk about what you did great. Talk about what you haven't gotten done yet. What are the problems that help you go from A to B, right? Because you never get there, but you move in that direction. So what's the problem with the healthcare industry? It's expensive. 17.5% of the GDP is what I think I read this morning. Probably continue to take up more. So it's expensive, like on a macro scale, but it's expensive at a micro scale as well. Number one. Number two, it's not accessible to all kinds of people. It's not accessible. Sometimes it's not even accessible to us.
Right.
It's not accessible. And quality is uneven. A is not equal to B is equal to C. It's just uneven.
Tenfold differences. Tenfold differences.
Is that right? Yeah. And sometimes you can't even tell.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. That's one bucket of problems. The other bucket of problems is it's like very fragmented, right? And while there's been rapid consolidation in the industry, hospitals and healthcare systems and physician groups, it's still extremely fragmented. Some markets more than others, and the consumer or the whatever you want to call people like us when we're accessing health care, you have to navigate that. So it's fragmented. And I don't think I'm not sure if all the stuff that everyone is doing, It's hard to know. Yeah, I don't know if all the stuff that everyone is doing and working very hard at is going to get us to where we need to go in the time frame that we need to get there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes, you know, you have a house and you want to renovate it, you add on to it. Like sometimes you just need to start
fresh. Yeah.
So as I was, you know, thinking about what, you know, I wanted to do next in my career, wanted to figure out how to make a contribution on a macro basis. And I'm not sure that's possible, but it at least gave me time to think about it.
It would be good for everyone if you are able to figure out.
Put that on the side for now. But again, you're being very simple minded about it, understanding that it's much more complicated. We're not investing in health, right? When you think of
right.
if I said, all right, I'm going to say a word, tell me the first word comes to mind, you know, healthcare industry. What do you think about? Hospitals.
Treatment.
Yeah, whatever. It's like, so we have to go upstream on care to health. And there's all kinds of social determinants of health that contribute to that. There's, you know, non-social determinants of health, just people's behaviors, genetics, lifestyle. There's all kinds of things, but we need to go upstream on health.
Purpose, right?
Yeah.
A deep thinking about what is our purpose? What should our purpose be, right? As, would cause us to anchor further upstream.
Macro, right? Yeah. So how do you do that? I mean, people have tried, and there's, that's part of the intention of moving to, changing, moving from fee-for-service to value-based care, right? Because then you have the money to allocate to it. I just don't think what we're doing now is going to get us to where we're going fast enough. Right. That doesn't mean that there aren't organizations that aren't doing a great job. There are, right? But I just don't. So we have to go upstream on health. And again, multifaceted.
So that's and multi-sector. It won't just be healthcare as it is today, right?
It's life.
Yeah, it's
life. The second thing is, going upstream again on, early warning signs. Mm-hmm. Again, the industry has made extraordinary progress in that area, why they have prostate screening and mammography, but there's been the advancement in science has and will continue to give insight into the human experience where we can forecast whether or not we're going to have a problem. So early, early warning signs, genetics, sensors, remote monitoring, different kinds of, testing. And there's there's a lot of books that are written about mm-hmm. this. And you see these pockets out there. But I think that is a whole segment that, again, you're investing in health. Okay, now we're going to have a problem. So before we have the problem, let's, intervene. And then the third thing is, I remember when I left graduate school and deciding where you wanted to work, you had two choices in the healthcare industry, or three choices. Work for a hospital, you work for an insurance company, or you work for the pharmaceutical industry. And I think that hospitals are still viewed as the centerpiece of the healthcare industry. Yeah. They should be on the outer bands of the industry, right?
Yeah.
If you drew a set of concentric circles, you got to have the patient in the middle and their health.
Yeah.
And the hospital is sort of at the end of that. That doesn't mean hospitals and healthcare systems that once were hospital systems can't go upstream. They can. But sort of the hospital of the future needs to be different than the hospital of the past. And there is, I think, not enough effort around top-down macro perspective, envisioning what that is. And that's not to say that even organizations around where we sit right now aren't trying to do that. I just don't think we're moving fast enough. And then the final thing is, we're all getting older.
Yeah.
And if you believe the science, over the course of time, maybe not our time, but over the course of time, people will be living longer and a lot longer, potentially a lot longer. I happen to believe in some of the science around these longevity discussions in terms of how they're developing. So we need a much better way to help people live longer, more productive lives, you know, work longer than they may have had in the past, you know, live at home longer, and you're being able to be, you know, cared for in a way that's different than the way, you know, what happens now. You know, end of life is not is not what it should be. So anyway, I think that, you know, all these experiments, I think on a micro level, what individual organizations are doing, going from A to B, however they do that. And, you know, all the organizations like yours that are helping organizations do better in terms of their quality outcomes is critical. And as that spreads across the country and we create movements, it's just not going to be enough.
Right.
And it's not fast enough. And the macro efforts, I think it's challenging for the federal government to be a fast catalyst for this. I think as employers who are paying a big part of the bill are starting to walk the talk of how they're, because, you know, they're the ones who are subsidizing Medicare and Medicaid on behalf of the people who are providing care with employer-sponsored healthcare. They're doing some more things. They have the ability to move the needle. And then, you know, you have the organizations that weren't in healthcare that are now in healthcare are doing interesting things. Amazon, Walmart, you know, whoever. I mean, you could be cynical about it in terms of what their motivation is, but they're moving the needle. They're moving the needle. Some people say they're making it more complicated, more fragmented. Some people would say they're actually motivating others to be better and faster. Otherwise, they're going to lose to them. And then you have all the organizations that didn't exist 10 years ago or 5 years ago or 3 years ago or even yesterday that are startups that are helping move the needle. There's some bigger startup efforts, right? So we're in Pittsburgh. Another fellow Pittsburgher, a guy by the name of Mark Harrison, who was at Cleveland Clinic. You probably know Mark.
I know Mark, Dr. Harrison. Yep.
Yeah. Then did amazing things at Intermountain, and now he's undertaking this initiative with General Catalyst as a backer of this to try to be more transformative, right? You have Highmark and what they're doing with Living Health. You have UPMC, which is an amazing organization. You have Kaiser and Geisinger. There's unlimited experiments, but if you just take everything that's going on and like put it in a big computer and fast forward it and lay it against what's happening in the world,
it doesn't feel like
it doesn't it just doesn't
set of experiments.
It just doesn't feel to me. We're moving the ball down the field a couple yards at a time, and I just don't know. I'm an eternal optimist, so I don't want to sound negative. I just think that, bottom up, top down is what makes things happen faster, as long as there's substance in the sort of in between. And I still think there's an opportunity for leaders of the future to emerge, to move us in that direction.
I think there's a huge opportunity and a huge need, and I agree, and you're being very politic. You know, I think, first of all, we radically agree about what I hear you doing is calling us for to undertake bolder experiments and efforts, more deeply rooted in purpose. And you're giving us a framework to think about. And I agree. I think, you know, for all the rhetoric that we've heard and some of the experiments that have started, you know, you still have the flows heading to the most acute place as the center of the system, despite the fact that, you know, even in healthcare delivery, more than half the revenue in the business is clearly not there anymore. But you're really calling us all the way to the person and health and the way society is changing, and advancements in medicine are helping us live longer and to stay more deeply rooted in purpose as we think about the experiments to get us where we need to go. And I know I appreciate it. And I'm sure others do. And I especially appreciate the note that you said, as you think about what's next in your career, which is great. So, you know, I think we can say that Lou Shapiro is not riding off into the sunset now that he's retired from HHS and is thinking hard about these things and thinking about future involvements. Is that fair to say that we can count on your leadership and mind to still be part of thinking this through and working this through for us in some way or other?
Short answer is yes. The longer answer is I think I'm keeping myself open for discovery in the future because, you know, I've no idea what the future holds. But yeah, for now, my focus is on helping people and companies try to move in the direction they need to move. So I'm taking sort of a portfolio approach to the next chapter. We'll see.
Which is great, which is exciting. And I know I, for one, am excited about the importance of the framework you sketched out. And again, it's sort of core simplicity and sort of candid observation of where we are and how we can evaluate different strategies as to whether they're really getting us there or not. So thank you, Lou. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for
sharing that framework. And I can already feel that at some point, maybe a couple of years from now, I'm going to be asking you for chapter three here to see how the experiments are panning out. We appreciate you coming. Thank you so very much.
Thanks.
And thanks, listeners, for joining us again today. Again, if you haven't heard chapter one with Lou or some of our other recent podcasts, Dave Zoss, Tim Lander, et cetera, check it out on Habitual Excellence on the Value Capture site. And for leaders who want to explore these simple but super powerful values-driven everyone, everyday frameworks, you may want to look at our seminar for C-level executives occurring at the end of February, last day of February, first day of March, in Austin, Texas. Enduring Excellence, we call that one. It's been powerful in the past, and it's hearing from peers like Lou. Lou will not be at this one, but who have led this way and some of the lessons learned and comparing notes with other people that are trying hard to make the kind of profound change that Lou has outlined. And again, small group, peers, safe, fun, exciting work. So check it out. You can find that on our website. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Thanks for being with us, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Habitual Excellence presented by Value Capture. We hope you'll subscribe to the podcast, and please also rate and review it in your favorite podcast directory or app. To learn more about Value Capture and how we can help your organization on this journey to habitual excellence, visit our website at www.valuecapturellc.com.